This episode is sponsored by yet another incredible company that I stand behind fully, and that is Bubs Naturals. Now, I've not only used Bubs products for 4 years now, but I've also had the founder, Sean Lake, on the show twice. And they are offering you, the audience of the Behind the Shield podcast, 20% off your entire order, and I will give you that code in a moment. Now, Bubs has a very powerful backstory. Glenn Bub Doherty is one of the two Navy SEALs killed protecting the CIA facility in Benghazi. And wanting to honor his best friend, Sean stood up this company. Now, it began with their flagship product, which is their collagen. And I have to say, as a Brit with really dry skin who's now 51, I cannot underline the importance of collagen in your diet. I have seen a huge positive impact on my skin, nails, hair, and most importantly, digestive system. Another thing that I use religiously is their MCT creamers. That's the part of coconut oil that is good for our brain. And they come in dairy and non-dairy, depending on your diet. Now, most recently, I've started adding in creatine to my diet, another thing that I've been told is good for our brain health. And with so many of us being exposed to TBIs, concussions, and sleep deprivation, the positive brain health element of creatine is essential. Now, in addition, Bubs makes apple cider vinegar gummies, vitamin C, and their hydration product, Hydrate or Die. And several of these products are also NSF certified, which is the highest level of certification as far as efficacy and cleanliness. Now, one of the most important elements of this company, in my opinion, is that they are a social business, meaning 10% of their profits go to charity, and in this case, that is the Glenn Doherty Foundation. Now, as I mentioned before, they are offering you, the audience of the Behind the Shield podcast, 20% off your entire order if you use the code BTS at bubsnaturals.com. And if you want to hear more about the products, the backstory, and how Sean used Glenn's story to help other veterans, listen to episodes 558 and 1055 of the Behind the Shield podcast. This episode is sponsored by Stationwise, the first staffing software to be truly firefighter-proof. Now, you may be wondering why I have software as a sponsor when I focus usually on physical and mental health of the first responders, and I will tell you exactly why. For the first time, this is a staffing platform that also is able to integrate wellness information through call load tracking, exposures, and wearables integration. Now, of course, Stationwise focuses on staffing and allows you to manage staffing, choose vacation picks, put in rules for leave and trades, and even deploying strike teams. But through the latest programming and AI automation, they have streamlined this process to free up battalion chiefs so they can focus on what they're supposed to be doing on the operational side and the fire ground. Now, Stationwise is also able to monitor not only how many calls we've responded to in the shift, but the duration of the call, therefore the rest and recovery in between, thus monitoring the sleep deprivation that degrades our health and performance. It's accessible not only through the computer, but also on Apple and Android devices, meaning that you can access it not only within the station itself, but outside as well. Now, one of the most powerful features of Stationwise, in my opinion, is the ability to run reports. Therefore, for example, be able to see just how much money is being used on overtime that could actually be front-loaded for proactive staffing, as well as setting alarms knowing when you are hitting overtime parameters. And another important feature is the integration of other programs and software for payroll, training, reports, etc. Now, Stationwise is trusted by numerous agencies in California, Texas, and Idaho. And if you want to hear the full story from the founder, who he himself is a son of a firefighter, listen to episode 1163 with Marcus Edwards. And if you want to book a demo or learn more, go to stationwise.com. Welcome to the Behind the Shield podcast. As always, my name is James Gearing, and this week I have an incredible episode for you. Andrew Douglas is one of my previous guests on episode 989. He is a former firefighter paramedic and the founder of Siento. Blake Richardson is the son of a firefighter and co-founder of the alert system, EaseAlert. So in this conversation, we take a deep dive into Blake's early life as a son of a firefighter, how he decided to develop a technology that would help his father's profession, how Siento is not only a mental health app, but uses AI to actually help peer support members become better at these conversations, and so much more. Now, before we get to this incredible conversation, as I say every week, please just take a moment. Go to whichever app you listen to this on, subscribe to the show, leave feedback, and leave a rating. Every single 5-star rating truly does elevate this podcast, therefore making it easier for others to find. And this is a free library of almost 1,200 episodes now. So all I ask in return is that you help share these incredible men and women's stories so I can get them to every single person on planet Earth who needs to hear them. So with that being said, I introduce to you Andrew Douglas and Blake Richardson. Enjoy. Well, Andrew, I want to start by saying welcome back onto the Behind the Shield podcast. And Blake, I want to welcome you onto the show for the first time today.
Thank you, James. It's a pleasure to be part of it.
Yeah, glad to be here, James. Good to see your face again.
Likewise. Well, Andrew, where are we finding you on planet Earth this afternoon?
Well, I'm not in Costa Rica. It'd be a lot better if I was there, but I'm here in Washington State. It's a nice gloomy day, and it's hopefully going to get sunny out later, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I hope you get there. What about you, Blake? You're closer to me, aren't you?
Yep, that's right. I'm over in Tampa Bay, Florida. A little bit sunnier, a little bit muggier. Not quite the seasons that you get up there, Andrew, but it's nice down here.
Absolutely. It's cooling down now, thank God, a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's start with you, Blake. Andrew and I did an episode a while ago now. I want to kind of get your backstory. I know you've got an interesting first responder family dynamic. And then we'll get to the technology that we're going to talk about today. And then obviously what brings you two together. So tell me where you were born and tell me a little bit about your family dynamic, what your parents did, how many siblings.
So I was actually born in the state of Washington and my family is from there originally. And so I have one younger brother. He's 2 years younger than I am, Kyle. And my parents grew up in the state of Washington, got their degrees as teachers. A lot of teachers in my family, I think, we've counted it many times. The number keeps adding and adding, but I think there's maybe 11 or 12 teachers in my first immediate family, extended with cousins and aunts and uncles. And so that was part of the family heritage. And then both of my parents decided to move to Florida. And it was actually just, let's go visit my uncle, my mom's brother, for 6 months. And then that 6 months turned into a full-time relocation. And we loved it. So I grew up in Florida. We moved when I was 4. And after moving to Florida, my parents were kind of looking for what they could do for a profession. And teaching was kind of more difficult to come by and maybe wasn't something that they wanted to do for their whole lives. And so my dad was doing some substitute teaching up in Georgia. We moved to Florida, northeast tip of Florida. It's called Fernandina Beach. And it's right there on the border of Florida and Georgia, the Florida-Georgia line, many know it as. And he was teaching substitute for a little while. And then one day in Fernandina, we went to the Kmart, back when Kmarts were a thing, and the local fire department was there with the ladder truck. And so we went up, talked to them, and the guys there said, hey, you should check this out as a career. You get every day as a Friday, so you can kind of do whatever you want on those other 3 days, those other 2 days, which I'm sure we'll talk about, James. But for him, it was pretty great because he wanted to be around my brother and I growing up, and we played baseball, so he got to come to all of our baseball games. He'd drive the engine over to the field and hang out, but it was a great profession. So I got to grow up around it in the firehouse with the guys and gals who were working there. And that was my first exposure to the fire service.
Every day should be a Friday, not a Monday. And we will get to that.
That's right. Well done.
All right. Well, what about sports and exercise? What were you playing and doing back then?
I was a baseball player. My lifelong dream was to be the shortstop for the Texas Rangers. And there was a very narrow opportunity of success there. And it didn't work out that way. But I'm really grateful for the turns in life that have gotten me to this point on the call with you two today. But it was all about baseball. I loved every sport, basketball, football. Football wasn't as good to me. I dislocated my hip after about 4 weeks playing football when I was 13. And so that wasn't the longest career, but I ended up getting back into baseball, and that was it for me.
I won't take too deep a dive into it, but this is one of the kind of aha moments I had when I came to the States, as I kept meeting guys in their, you know, like mid to late 20s, early 30s, very deconditioned by that point, and they'd always have the same Uncle Rico story. I could have, would have, should have, if it wasn't for my ACL, my whatever. And I was like, what the fuck are they doing to their kids in this country? And this is it. There's, you know, in some places, there's a very thin line between performance and the longevity of the child. And a lot of institutions cross that line and use the child to win a game. And then they're like, all right, bye, thanks. You know, and they forget that now you've just either burnt a kid out on a sport and exercise, or you've given actual injuries, where that's why I think, you know, some of the reasons why we struggle with obesity in this country is we don't forge a love of movement. We create high level of performance and then kind of discard the athlete after.
That's a really interesting perspective. And it's true, I think, in a lot of ways. But yeah, I will say I used to be able to throw a football a quarter mile, James. I promise you. Just like but it's true. I think it's an interesting perspective.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, when you're talking to high level coaches and they agree, then you're like, okay, it's not just, you know, this bizarre perspective that I have. This is actually a thing. And then you get into the whole travel ball and these sports clinics and, you know, kind of living vicariously through your child instead of just allowing them to play a load of sports. And then obviously if they're just very, very good at one, then yeah, then you can kind of help steer them into the high level performance. But, you know, when you see in Europe, you know, there's more of just play in school, and then you still have these elite athletes that come out, you know, in the Olympics and, you know, soccer and all these other games. So I think if, you know, if we were, if that system was the right way of doing it, then America would win every sport, but we don't. So there's that.
Right.
All right. What about career aspirations? So you mentioned about, you know, ride along station visits, et cetera. Were you dreaming of the fire service when you were younger, or was there already something else in your mind?
No, it was baseball. That was it. That was my profession, my dream, day, night. That's what it was. And I think the fire service was always interesting to me. It was great for my family. My dad was home, you know, whenever he could be. I also saw the tolls that it took on him. And we can get into that in a little bit. But that was something that I definitely picked up on at a young age. Like, it's not an easy job. It's never painted to be an easy job. It's not, period. It never will be. But that always kind of stood out in terms of the toll that it takes on you, and hearing the tones and knowing what they have to do when they respond. But I was interested in it. I went to college, and kind of in high school, early college, I was thinking maybe that's something I do. I held on to the baseball dream way longer than I should have. But it was kind of, I guess, mid-college, I realized, well, I don't really have baseball as a professional route anymore. What might it be? Fire service was on that list. But it wasn't the only thing, you know. For me, it was kind of eyes open. Who can I meet? What kind of relationships do I have? Can I build? And where will that take me? And so I was just really eyes open, seeing what was in front of me.
Go reflecting back then to being the son of a firefighter, you know, what were the pros? What were the beautiful parts of your father's career that you enjoyed as a child? And then what was the other side as well?
Well, it's the coolest thing to be a firefighter. You know, everybody looks at the firefighters and the engine driving down the street with the lights and sirens. That's really cool for anybody at any age. It definitely catches your attention. And so I always looked up to that, and just the knowledge that you have as a firefighter. He's a paramedic. So firefighter, paramedic, now he's a battalion chief, but at the time, firefighter, paramedic, you know, a lot, and you're really capable as a person, and you're there for people when they need you to be. When anybody raises a hand, you can likely answer that question, because you get called to figure anything and everything out. And so I always looked up to that, and still do. I think it's a really impressive skill set, kind of the characteristics that it takes to be that kind of person, I think are awesome characteristics to embody. and the ability for him to come to the baseball games and come home for a lunch or a dinner every once in a while. You know, that's pretty cool to bring the fire engine by. We had some incidents where one time we had a fire in the house going and forgot to open the flue. And so we had, you know, smoke billowing and all that stuff. And he came by with the fire engine and, you know, took the fan, blew it all out, that sort of thing. Like, that's cool to have that ability to be there. We were in his first due territory. And so I really enjoyed and appreciated, revered all of those things about his job. And the things that I kind of referred to earlier were he'd come off work 8 a.m. every third day or more often with overtime. And it's, you could tell, like, it's been a long night. He's been up 3 or 4 times. It's, you know, dangerous calls, you know, taxing calls. And you could see the toll that it takes on him as a person, and it would on anybody. So those are the things that kind of stood out to me. And then being at the firehouse, hearing the tones drop and just thinking like, man, I feel that. And I'm not even going on this call. You have to listen to that all day, every day, and you don't know when it's coming. And it could happen 10 times. It could happen 0 times. That, to me, those are the things that kind of stood out as, that's a challenging profession.
It's funny you made the comment earlier about, you know, people think it's an easy job. It's not an easy job. For some reason, it popped in my head. I don't know what it is about our profession, but everyone focuses on when we're not running a call. So like, oh, they sit on the lazy boy. Oh, they have lunch together. Oh, they get to work out. And I'm like, well, where's that in the Deadliest Catch? Where's everyone going? Oh, yeah, but they got to have tea and in the boat. They're lucky. It must be easy to be a crab fisherman. You know what I mean? No other profession does that. But in the fire service, for some reason, they always focus on the little moments we have between calls rather than 24 hours in a meat grinder.
Yeah, I don't get it. And it might have to do with the local community feeling like they're owed, you know, taxpayer dollars. We're giving you a job. Well, yeah, your taxpayer dollars are going to make sure your house doesn't burn down. They're going to make sure that when you have a double compound fracture, that the fire department is there, or whatever it is, they're there. And I think people don't think about that, because I don't know the exact percentage, but do you know off the top of your head kind of how often or what percentage of people actually call 911? I mean, it's not much of the population.
No. No, I mean, if you go over their entire lifetime, obviously it's going to be more, but I forget, you know, in a year it is, I think, single digits. So, you know, it's like that, you know, 80-20 rule kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah. Call it 80% conservatively. We'll never see the fire department, which is a good thing. But they're like, well, what am I paying for? Well, you're paying for the fact that they will be there in 5 minutes or less, no matter what is happening, no matter what time it is. So yeah, people overlook that if things are going well for them.
Yeah. Well, and also the fact that when those people arrive, the level of training that they've had to put themselves through, arguably many of them taken vacation days and paid out of their own pocket for a lot of those classes, you know, which you don't see in many other professions. So, well, before we kind of take a dive into the turn that your career took, Andrew, let's kind of go back and do kind of an overview. So for people listening that haven't heard the first conversation yet, give us an overview of your career in this profession, in the first responder profession.
Yeah, I started my career out in Washington State, similar to where Blake comes from. And, you know, I always wanted to be a firefighter. Ever since I was in kindergarten, going to the fire station and putting on gear, I was like, this is what I'm going to do with my life. And so I went into a period of what am I going to do with my life? And I, in ninth grade, had the opportunity to do a ride along for, you know, career day. And I instantly fell in love with the fire service because, and I'll be open and vulnerable about this, but I was seeking father figure and family in the fire service. And that gave what I was looking for. And so I was like, this is amazing. But unlike any toxic relationship, right? The chaos is not, doesn't need to be there, right? So, you know, got my career as a firefighter and a paramedic, and ultimately, you know, I didn't take care of myself. I suppressed all my feelings and my emotions, and ultimately it led to a suicide attempt and a complete change of my life, complete direction of my life. And you know, I'm really grateful that I'm here today. I missed the job. I don't miss the job. I miss the people in the you know, the coffee table and The competition and playing pickleball and those kinds of things. Like, that's what I miss the most about the job. I definitely don't miss working in Lakewood and being up all night. And I know we're probably going to talk about sleep, but that was a huge thing for me too. Once I left the fire service, like, I didn't realize how sleep deprived I was and how sick I truly was. And, you know, it's been a journey and here we are today. So,
How many years did you have total actually on the line?
Career, I had 9 years, and then I started as a volunteer in 2005, and then I went to medic school in 2011.
Brilliant. So when you were in these stations, plural, what kind of alerting systems did they have back then?
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, shoot, that's when I saw what Blake was doing, I got excited because, you know, we had the old school red lights come on, the fucking truck is running another call in the middle of the night and I'm getting woken up, right? It was brutal. You know, being at my station, you know, we typically didn't, it seemed like every night we started running calls at 6 p.m. and I slept all day. It just got exhausting because either you're going to hear it in the next room or it's going to come on in your room, you know, these calls, and it just totally drains you.
Was it one of those as well where even if it's a different rig, it's waking up the whole station every time?
Yep. And in my first department, it was the whole fucking county. It was a small department. I'm like, why are we listening? I don't care what Shelton's doing, you know, like, I want to sleep. So it was just like our policy that, you know, you had the alerting system. We did change systems though. But it was still, you got woke up by your department. So instead of being woken up by the county, you now got woken up by your department, but it was still pretty crap.
When I went to my first department, Hialeah, it was the old, you know, wake everyone up, scare the hell out of you. And then when I went to Anaheim, there was one, the first station I was assigned to, they had not individual dorms, but they had the little, you know, cubbies, the little compartments within the communal dorm. But they had that alerting system where you could actually punch in what rig you were in. And then you sat, you know, kind of rig appropriate. And after a while, you got used to it. You really did. There was an LED strip that would kind of give you the visual stimulus. And then you had a tone that you could set higher or lower. And usually the rest of the, you know, the bunk room, if they didn't have a call, or if they had a call, you know, they'd be pretty good the next morning. And they'd say, you know, how'd you guys do? And then, you know, whichever rig got murdered that night would look at them with this disdain and be like, we had four, you guys slept through. So I saw, you know, an element of, oh, you can actually, you know, be intelligent with alerting systems so that you're not waking everyone up. Well, then the next two I went to again, it was back to the old way on the East Coast. And one, the last one I worked for, I even brought to them the Anaheim system. And their communications chief at the time was like, this is a really good idea. Let's do this. And then they fired him. And then the administration said, actually, no, we're going to wake up the whole bunk room and put a monitor in the bunk room so they can see where the call is. So now you've got everyone woken up and an LED screen that's now illuminating the whole dorm. So I've seen, you know, this to and fro. And really, I mean, if we're being completely blunt and honest, it's about egos in administration to actually want to change. So with you know, Andrew's perspective and mine now in four fire departments, let's go back to you, Blake. So what made you even kind of think about firefighter alerting systems? And then let's talk about the wearables that you've developed.
Yeah, I mean, the first thoughts were around hearing those tones. So you're out there for Thanksgiving meal or just hanging out for breakfast and you hear the tones. And like I described, I'd feel that in my heart where it's like, whoa, okay, there's something going on here. And it might even be the other station or the other department in the same county, to Andrew's point. It really doesn't matter, you know, what the call is, you're going to feel that alert. And so that was the initial reasoning around like, man, there's got to be a better way to do this. I see my dad coming off a shift and he's beat down. And I see, or I feel the tones when I'm there at the firehouse, and that doesn't feel good. Like, what if we didn't have to have a blast, an audible blast that scares the hell out of you? And so that was the initial idea, is replace that audible blast with a tactile or vibration alert. And that was back a long time ago. way before I started the company, I was just mentioning that to my mom in the living room before school one day, and didn't do anything with it at that time. But then later in college, I pitched that idea again. And it was an entrepreneurship course. I pitched several ideas. All the ideas were bad, real bad, except for this one. And fortunately, they gave me a third try. I was the only student they let get multiple tries. But I was like, give me one more. And I was afraid to share this idea because I didn't want someone to steal the idea. It was naive of me to think, oh, if I tell this idea, everybody's going to know it's the greatest idea since sliced bread and they're going to steal it and I'll get no credit. Well, that's wrong. You need people around you to support you, and you need to get it out and get feedback on it. But that was the initial step there, and went straight to the local fire department as part of the class. That's what college was great for me, was I took this class and I was required to build a business model around this idea. Otherwise, I would have sat there and not done anything with it. And talked to the fire chief, and his health and wellness leader was there. So he had tasked a firefighter. It was early on in kind of the health and wellness initiatives in the state of Florida. And he had just come back from a conference that week. And he's like, oh man, this is a real problem. I know this. Actually, if you could develop this, that would be really interesting. And so it was the right people at the right time. So many steps along the way where it could have bounced a different way. And I wouldn't know you guys, wouldn't be talking about EaseAlert. EaseAlert wouldn't exist. But today, EaseAlert is now a fully wireless alerting system. And it does the same exact thing that a fire station alerting system would. But we call it a firefighter alerting system because it takes what traditionally goes to a building and has wired in components to alert a station and delivers that alert directly to the firefighter or the responder. And so those devices are all wireless. We have what we call tac pods. They go on your wrist, they vibrate. We have a bunk alert. It goes in your bunk, it's a vibration motor. We have vis alerts, which are red LEDs, LED strips, display boards, dispatch consoles, the whole thing. But it all stemmed from that idea of there's got to be a better way to notify people than that blast of those audible tones.
Well, before, when we were talking a few months ago now, you know, I was thinking about, well, how does a parent wake their child? They don't just pull the door open and scream at their three-year-old, hey, wake up! You know, you kind of gently rock them, you know, and then they slowly wake up. Versus if you screamed at them, they'd sit up, you know, immediately and their heart would be out their mouth. So it does make a lot of sense to me. And again, working on that individual dorm thing, it just makes no sense whatsoever to wake anyone up who doesn't need to be there. And this is where I think, sadly, ego comes into the fire service. You have a battalion chief. Oh, I need to listen to my crew and see what they're up to. No, you don't. Go to fucking bed. They're big boys and girls. You know, if they need you, they'll call you. You're not that bloody important. So get some sleep so you're not an asshole when you do wake up. Right. You know, it's just so fundamentally, you know, obvious. But again, the fire service, the way we've always done it. So talk to me then about the efficacy. As you started developing this product, what were you seeing as far as results compared to that 0 to 100, you know, lights and sirens, you know, heart rate goes through the roof that we're all used to?
Well, that was the big thing for us when we realized that it's not just healthier and less startling, but it's more effective than a traditional audible alerting system alone. And what we found is that touch or tactile is a more effective way to notify somebody. Just like you said, when you want to get somebody's attention, you can yell at them and they'll probably turn around. But if they're sleeping, they may not wake up. Some people sleep through those tones, especially after a long day. You can sleep through an audible tone. But if someone comes and taps you on the shoulder, you're not going to sleep through that. And even if someone sleeps through the tone, what do? You kick their bed or you shake them because you need that touch. And that's your body's way of saying, there is something or someone here, like right here, that needs my attention. I need to respond to that. And so it's more effective than the audible notifications are. And that for us was a big light bulb. So we got to know that when we're alerting emergency responders, it has to work every time. It has to be simple. It has to be effective. And the goal in getting you out the door, actually, we help get you out the door faster. It's not about slowing things down or putting soft edges on things or, you know, putting foam around or bubble wrapping. It's not that. The job is still dangerous and it is stressful and it's a challenge. But what we do is eliminate the unnecessary challenges and improve your capabilities as you're getting out the door. So you talked about understanding the efficacy around it. That's where we started with knowing, okay, this is a real problem. We know this. The science says firefighters, the leading cause of on-duty death is a heart attack. And firefighters are up to 14 times more likely to die of a heart attack during alarm response than non-emergency duties. And so those two pieces of information helped us realize, okay, this is a real problem here. And we know that cardiovascular risk is increased with the fight or flight response, the repeated fight or flight response. Your arteries become inflamed, increases your risk of heart attack and stroke. So those are all scientific facts. And now we get into understanding the solution. So we read all those papers and started reaching out to the researchers who published those papers. Some really great researchers, I'm sure you know a lot of them, but Sarah Janke, Denise Smith, Stephanos Kales, Joel Billings, the researchers now who we're looking to in the fire service for health and safety. And every single one of them, believe it or not, responded. And every one of them said, I think you're onto something here. Let's put together a paper or a research study. And we submitted an application, and the NIH funded a clinical study, which we can dive into in more detail, but that was the kind of proof around the efficacy around the system.
Well, let's dive into that now. What were the results?
Yeah, so we measured their subjective health ratings compared to the traditional alerting system. So the big thing was here, tell us how your self-reported health on the traditional alarm versus the tactile alert. And it was a study conducted in the Midwest. Dr. Sarah Janke and Dr. Joel Billings were kind of leading it. From Joel Billings is with Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona, but he's based out of Stillwater, home of the Oklahoma State Fire College. And then Dr. Janke is out of Kansas City, Missouri, with the Center for Fire Rescue and EMS Health Research. So they were the research teams around it. And the NIH said, okay, here's the money. EaseAlert provide the technology. Those two groups do the research. And there were two fire departments that raised their hand, the Stillwater Fire Department in Oklahoma and the Central Jackson County Fire Protection District in Missouri. So we got 48 total participants across five stations between the two departments, and did a full pre-post study looking at both objective and subjective data, heart rate monitors, accelerometers, IRB approved, subjective surveys, you know, the whole gamut. So the data around it was, we saw that with the traditional alerting system, so like the Klaxon Bell, that's what they had at one of the departments, we saw an improvement of 388% on the self-reported health ratings of the traditional audible compared to the EaseAlert tactile. And then when you combine the two, because the other department had a ramp up audible, which you guys, I think you both said you had experience with, right? Where it goes from quiet to loud. And even when you conglomerated the two, you put both of those results together from all 48 firefighters, it was still a 169% improvement in the self-reported health ratings. And then even more than that, we asked, what is your agree or disagree with this statement? And it was, EaseAlert is less startling than the traditional alerting system. And you guys know, anybody listening to this podcast knows, getting firefighters to agree on anything is a challenge. You know, like, what's for dinner? What color are the new t-shirts? Anything is a challenge. And we got 95% of those respondents to agree or strongly agree that it is less startling. And then we asked, how does it affect your response capabilities? And 90% agreed or strongly agreed that it improves their response capabilities. So we're going back now to get some more of the objective data. We saw some pretty drastic reductions in that heart delta for some respondents. Other respondents, we had a little bit of mixed bag with that. We think it had to do with the equipment itself. So we're going back to a full clinical trial right now. We just submitted the application last week. So fingers crossed, we'll have more to share. Who knows? That's going to be 5 years down the road, but we'll get that data and excited to continue on that path.
Beautiful. Well, Andrew, you mentioned about transitioning out the fire service. You ended up creating something amazing with Siento as well. So before, again, we talk about the relationship between the two, talk to me about, you know, what made you create that, and for people listening, what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I kind of talked earlier about my moment of crisis when I had a suicide attempt. And at that moment, I didn't really have anything to turn to. We had a peer support team. Dave, my brother, he blessed me by being by my side within like the first 10 minutes of that event happening. And, you know, part of that was just this stigma of like, I was convinced like I'm losing my job. Everybody's going to think I'm crazy. You know, nobody's going to want to talk to me. Well, there were some of those people, let's just be honest. And that's kind of what we're trying to solve, right, at Siento. But ultimately, you know, I wanted to build something that I wish I had when the system failed me. And when I came up with the idea, initially, we recognized that there's some other solutions that are already being at play in the fire service. You know, where are they going wrong? And what aren't they solving, right? Because it's just a band. I think we all know, like in the fire service, we do like to put band-aids on things, and it comes down to ego, James, again, right? Is that we're not willing to look in the mirror and be open to change. But the thing that really stood out with me the most, like during that experience and when we start Siento and hearing how, you know, peer support is so important to every agency is like, okay, how do we connect people at a push of a button, but do it anonymously so you don't have to worry about that stigma of you reaching out for help? You know, is okay. It's totally okay. And I hate the saying, like, it's okay to not be okay, to be honest. Like, we all suffer. Every human being suffers. Everybody we're walking next to is suffering. So if we can hold space for somebody, and, you know, that's why we just launched something called Siento Sim, which essentially helps people like practice having those difficult conversations and getting repetition and talking about suicide, relationship issues, death, dying. I mean, these are things that so many people are afraid to have a conversation about. And so, you know, my mission is like, how do we make human connection instantaneous? And how do we get people to start talking about the problems and the challenges our families and our firefighters are facing across the United States? And so, yeah, it's been a interesting journey. As Blake is my, we definitely support each other, which is awesome. It's a really lonely journey. At the same time, the job, anybody that's watching this, like if you're a firefighter and you're like, I want to start a business or I'm thinking about starting a business, fucking go do it today. Just do it. Don't care about what anybody else thinks. Like Blake's saying, you think your idea is great. Your idea doesn't mean anything until you execute it. It all comes down to execution, and you can have nothing. I started my company. I lost everything. I went through another crisis moment, and ultimately my wife took my kids away, and I had $73 in my name. And I just had faith and belief in myself that, you know, we can't, this, what I'm trying to build is a thing, and nobody believe me for the longest time, but I didn't quit. And so if you're thinking about starting a job, just, or a new career, or you want to start a business, just do it. Don't let anybody hold you back. You're the only person that's holding you back from success. So yeah, it's been a fun journey, and I'm super pumped kind of share what Blake and I are up to and how we can support firefighters together.
I just saw an Instagram video from Stephen Pressfield, the author, and I love his work. I think he's so spot on. And in this writing journey that I've been on, I definitely heed a lot of his advice. And I think he was responding to a question he gets a lot, which is, well, what about competition? And he goes, 99.9% of people are going to give up. Yep. And it's funny because when, you know, you're talking about, you know, the businesses that you've created, I was thinking even just talking about the 2472 in the fire service. You talk about an island. I was on an island for a long, long time, getting laughed at, getting ridiculed. And I knew it was the truth. I knew that it was the solution. It was the biggest herd of elephants in the room. And just like the two of you, when you've got something that you know needs to be out there, then it doesn't matter. You get knocked down, you just dust yourself off again. But yeah, I mean, if the first time you get knocked down, you're like, oh, I'm going to do something else. And obviously it wasn't really burning in your heart. But I couldn't agree more with both of you. If that thing is there, you know, then I think you're not driven by the money, you're driven by the mission. And hopefully for all three of us, we'll be able to see some financial gain at some point from this. But yeah, I couldn't agree more. This is what's exciting about entrepreneurship in the first responder professions, and why we shouldn't be relying on overtime as the be-all and end-all for our income, is that the skills that we have, whether you're an actual first responder, whether you're a son of a first responder, you can forge another entire area where you're also making the world better, even if you're not wearing a uniform anymore.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, I think too, you bring up like competition. We talk about competition, like I like to win. I'm a winner. I'm a firefighter, right? Like, I'm competitive. And it's been really interesting to see, like, transitioning from the fire service where it's more team-led environment to an eat-your-own environment has been a very different experience for me. But what's really exciting is competition drives innovation. That is what competition is about. So if you can out-innovate me and out-execute me, go for it. But our team is ready to innovate. And like, that's why Blake and I are working together, because, you know, we believe in people first. Like, I think with everything that's going on in the world right now, like, you know, we have an opportunity to choose love and choose people first over money, over anything else, because at the end of the day, like, that's what matters. Like, your job doesn't matter. Your house doesn't matter. It's the people and the community around you that truly matters. And so, you know, I heard not too long ago, like, this saying that really stuck with me, and I'll always remember it, but it's comparing, like, what a buffalo and a cow do in a storm, right? Like, buffaloes run into the storm and through the storm. And as hard as that is and difficult as it is, if you fight through that fear, if you fight through that feeling that you have, I can't do this, you're going to get out the other side a lot quicker than the person who runs away. So I think as a fire service in general, when it comes to wellness, and it's not just mental health, it's whole body wellness, we need to start running into that storm together and really start making changes and not checking boxes anymore. I think you talk about leadership and ego, and, you know, it's just a check of the box when it comes to wellness. It's getting better, but it's still a check of the box.
Winston Churchill said, if you're going through hell, keep going. And it's the same exact thing. You know what I mean? I think this is what we need. I talk about courage or cowardice a lot. And I think just to kind of touch on what you're alluding to, Andrew, because as we're sitting here now on 9/12, which arguably is the day that we all came together as a nation, the day I released my book deliberately because it was such a pertinent day, there is so much divisive rhetoric going out there, but that's the cowardice. 100%. If your message is, oh, we all hate each other, then you're a coward, because someone with courage is someone who's going to pull everyone together, even if there are differences, even if there are different, difficult conversations, even if there are traumas in the past that we've got to forgive and move on. You know, that, I think, is this conversation. And what both of you are doing with your products and what I'm trying to do with my mission is not driven by greed or winning as far as some corporate race. The competition is the rising tide lifts all ships. if we want to make the world a little better, we've got to innovate with that too. So, you know, we can take all of these great minds and this great technology that's been used to hurt people, and we can put it back, because most innovation started not as a weapon. You know, it started as something good. So put it back into the place where we heal people. Because, I mean, hurt people, and healed people heal people.
Yeah, that second part of the saying is great. I hadn't really heard that, but it's so true. Don't finish it with hurt people, finish it out with the good side of things, the good side of people. There's always a good side.
100%. Well, Andrew, just I want to kind of circle around for a second. You mentioned the Siento Sim.
Yeah.
I can't remember if we talked about this in the original conversation, if we've talked about it since on the phone, or if it was with someone else, but I remember talking to someone about the ability to actually practice for peer support teams and people that would be interacting with people that were struggling. Is this one of the tools?
Yeah. So it's a first of its kind. Actually, my son came up with the idea. My son's 12. So I'm super proud of that. So he's our AI. Brody is that person that you're going to be giving support to, is my son. But yeah, it's getting those repetitions. You know, we heard day in and day out, like, one, it's hard to get us all in the same room. And then number two, I don't feel comfortable because I only do 1-2 peer support requests a year. But through that is, like, we've learned, like, we just launched it in June. So everything's very new and, you know, we're growing super fast. We have a lot of agencies that are buying into this because it's such a big problem that nobody's solved yet. But what we're seeing is agencies open to the idea of, wait, why are we only training our peer supporters to give support? We should all have emotional readiness to be there and be present for one of our brother. Well, if we're going to call each other brothers and sisters, we need to be present there for them. You don't need to solve the problem. You just need to learn how can you sit in that space with somebody who's suffering and show them compassion and empathy to get them through it on their own. It's not your role as a firefighter to make me healthy. The only way I'm going to get healthy is when I look inward in myself. And your job in that space when somebody's struggling is just to simply hold a mirror up to them for them to then take that internally and make a change.
Absolutely. All right. Well, then let's get to why you're standing here side by side today, or sitting here virtually side by side, that is. So, Andrew, let's start with you. Kind of how did you come across Blake's technology, and then talk to me about this relationship that you forged?
Well, it started out with his like really shitty video on his website, which is a lot better now, Blake. Sorry about that. No, I'm kidding. Cause like, no, I watched this video on his website and I'm like, fuck, am I on Target Solutions right now, Blake? Like,
triggered.
I was big time. It's funny. Yeah, never mind. But yeah, so ultimately, you know, I saw Blake and what he was doing, and I saw something I wish I had. Right when I was on the job. And, you know, so I just randomly, I don't know if it was me or you, either way, we got connected, we started talking. And from a human level, right, I connected with Blake in his personal mission. Him being a firefighter's son is super important. I think in the space of technology and public safety and wellness, you know, I think, we talk about greed, like there is a lot of that in our space. And when I see somebody who's truly a human being and puts other people first and is thinking about, you know, the whole wellness of a firefighter outside of just, you know, their product. And when Blake and I connected, it was just easy. And then I like to come up with crazy ideas. We bounce ideas off of each other. And so ultimately we decided, like, you know, let's combine forces. And, you know, Blake and his company are doing amazing things of, you know, the physical aspect of the firefighter. How do we keep them healthy and safe that way? And then by combining that with our technology, we can also now take care of the firefighter's mental well-being and wellness in general as well. So it made the partnership opportunity super easy for us.
So how does it integrate?
Well, we can't get away that information yet. No, we got some secret squirrel stuff we're working on. So right now, like there is no integration. It's working together, but we definitely have some big plans that, you know, we talk about innovation. We talk about competition. Hopefully what we're about to do in the future will strive others to create something similar. So.
Well, Blake, back to you for a second. With you being here in Florida, with this state now finally really starting to have this kind of revolution of the 2472, so starting to finally address, as I always say, the herd of elephants in the room, the woeful shifts that we work, and that causing the recruitment and retention crisis. What, if any at all, has been the conversation as far as the shifts themselves as you've been there displaying your product?
It's definitely becoming a much hotter topic. And even I've talked with my dad about it recently with his department. And I mean, everybody's talking about it now. 5 years ago, it wasn't even considered, you know, in terms of, that's not true. You were considering it, but there were not,
on an
it
island.
Wasn't a hot topic. Like you said, yeah, you were on an island, like you said, but it wasn't something that everybody even knew was an option, truthfully. And, even more recently, with Dr. Billings, his whole realm is shift schedules and sleep health. And so I've talked with him all the time, and it became more and more of a question from fire departments that we're working with. And we're throughout the country, and in fact, more kind of outside of Florida than in Florida, which we're trying to change here pretty soon. But we're hearing from all over the country, people are really focusing on this. Like, they realize the impact it's having. And I tell everybody, the gold standard is 2472. Like, that's you, if you can do it. The return is there. You just got to convince your leadership and look to others around you. And we're seeing it more and more, especially in Florida. So I would say it's one of, if not the hottest topic that I'm hearing, especially in the state of Florida.
Well, what's interesting, if you actually break it down, it literally solves every problem that we have. Now, not solely, like if you get more sleep, all of a sudden the mental health issue is going to go away. But I mean, it makes a huge dent on the physical health, the mental health. What I'm really excited about is it shifts the lens from wellness to performance. So ironically, the opposite thing that we were having with the high school conversation earlier, you know, our whole conversation has been on reactive wellness. So, oh no, they're overweight. Oh no, they're hypertensive. Oh no, they're, you know, testosterone is 112, you know, and let's try and pull them back in. Well, these are tactical athletes. We should be talking about cardiovascular performance and, you know, breath work and, you know, mindfulness and all these things that the special forces and, you know, and other elite operators around the world have by their side. So there's a beautiful conversation with that. So all the chest beaters, the mustache wearers that, you know, love to film themselves on Instagram, if you really take this profession seriously, then you should be at the front of the line beating on the drum to get a healthy work week, because that's how you forge performance. And then you look at the financial side, obviously the wasted budget on overtime and lack of retention and workman's comp and medical retirements and lawsuits and all these other things, there's your money. And then once you fix the work week, well, now you've got more of a budget for, you know, Siento, Ease Alert, these other initiatives are going to then layer this beautiful first responder health boulder that we're going to be rolling down the hill.
Yeah, absolutely. It all builds on top of itself. And we see a lot of departments actually that are getting Ease Alert, and I'm sure Andrew can say the same for Siento. They're the ones that are already making those shift changes or already implementing those health and safety practices. They've already done steps, you know, 1, 2, 3, and they've already advanced so far along. And now they're able to add more because they're having better retention, increased recruitment, less overtime, less expenses, less liabilities. And they're now putting more into that, into their greatest resource, their personnel, to make sure that they can do their job more effectively and take care of their communities, improve their ISO ratings. It's just it's a positive vicious cycle that goes right up. You know, it adds onto itself.
100%. Andrew, anything to add?
Well, no, I was just thinking, like, in that the word that just kept popping in my head that it comes down to is like leadership. I think our biggest challenge we're facing right now is leadership. You know, we just ran a campaign. So we ran into like a bunch of agencies that, like rural agencies who can't afford to do peer support or don't even know where to start. Right. And we're like, well, shit, how can we support them? So we started like a campaign called I Feel, which is we sold t-shirts to fund getting a department out of Minnesota Peer Support. It's a rural agency north of Minneapolis. And what I loved about it was the leadership. So here I am, this crazy entrepreneur. We come up with an idea like literally a couple days before, and like I'm on the phone like trying to like, who can we support? And I just happened to run into this chief, and like he's like, I can talk to you today. And like, it was instantaneous. He had buy-in, but he said one thing that was like really impactful to me that I really respect with leaders is that he's like, I think this is great. I want my team to have buy-in. I want my team to lead this. And it's like, those are the best leaders who they don't push something on you. They look for somebody to step up in that moment to take something on and have initiative. And that just shows the members of the team that like, hey, your leader cares about you, right? They listen. Doesn't mean they're always going to do what you want or make you happy, but they at least listen and they give you ownership in being a part of that organization. And so, you know, I think it boils down to just, we have a really, we have very toxic leadership in the fire service, and I'll just call it out. It's getting better. Like, we're having different generations come in, but we still have a long way to go. And so it just boils down to leadership. People just need to step up. And it doesn't mean you're a fire chief to be a leader, right? A rookie firefighter can be a leader of their organization just as much as a fire chief can.
There's a Texas department that I think literally on Tuesday is going to be able to publicly announce that they're the first department to go to 2472. And I know that one of the people spearheading it in that department just hit his first year in that department. Wow. So there we go. Leadership within that department. So amazing. And I'm not saying he was the only person by any means, but definitely one of the driving forces. And this is what I've seen as well. When we go back to the mental health conversation, I was talking to someone about this just today. one of the least discussed areas of mental ill health in the first responder professions, and I'm sure a lot of other areas too, is, you know, organizational betrayal, toxic, you know, leadership, as you mentioned. Because if you are that driven first responder and you have service in your heart and you take your job seriously and you train and you stay in shape, and then the organization that you wear their patch on your shoulder says, sit down, shut up, you're making us look bad, that can be hugely detrimental because that goes against the very ethos of what you're doing in the first place. So what I'm excited about is as this health revolution starts to take hold and people are looking at other departments going, well, you told us that that would never work here. Well, why not? Because the neighboring department is doing it and I've heard nothing but good things. Now we're going to look back and go, okay, well, who was stopping us from progressing? And should that person still be in the position? Union president, chief, whoever that person, city, county council members, you were opposing the very things that were going to help the first responder wellness, that keep us fully staffed, delivery of service. So I think that anyone who's out there that is a bad leader that refuses to change, you're not going to be there very long. I hate to tell you, but it's going to happen.
Yeah, the change is happening all across the fire service. You're seeing younger firefighters come up and a one-year firefighter taking over and making a change like that. I mean, it's a different breed of firefighters. And some of the salty firefighters are saying, oh, I don't like that, or it's not the way we've done it in the past. But a lot of those firefighters that I talk to, even with Ease Alert, when we come in and we'll say, hey, this is Ease Alert, it's going to do this, and we know it's very different, they'll be really opposed. But then they'll kind of see some of the younger guys and gals take it on, and they start buying in because it just seems like the fire service in general is open to innovation more than it ever has been, which is very encouraging and exciting, because innovation doesn't necessarily mean throw out tradition. We honor tradition. We respect tradition and legacy. It's that way for a reason. That's what makes the fire service special. But don't let it impede your progress, you know, because progress is going to help you do your job better, help you go home safer, live longer, spend more time with your family. I think people are realizing that.
I get that word thrown in my face when we talk about the firefighter helmet. Oh, but it's tradition. No, that's a hat. That is a hat. If you really wanted to look the same way as people that when that first came out, then you wouldn't have an SCBA and you'd arrive with a horse. So you were fine moving forward with breathing apparatus, but all of a sudden the hat doesn't want to change. Tradition is selflessness and courage and service and problem solving. Those are the traditions of the fire service, camaraderie. So, you know, we've got to remove those two parts because, you know, the way we've always done it, that isn't tradition at all. That's a lack of humility, and that's a whole different conversation.
That's a great point.
Tim Ferriss had a guest on his show. He was a businessman from, I think it was Brazil or somewhere in, you know, Central South America. And he was talking about this philosophy that his father had, and he called it the three whys. And he said, if you have a question and you ask why three times, and there's a bona fide reason after each of those three whys, then you know it's a truth. So for example, you know, we need to drink water. Why? Well, because the body's made up of water. Why? Well, because that's what's needed at a, you know, molecular level to create all our functions. Okay, humans need water. That is an absolute truth. You know, we need to have an alerting system that wakes up the whole station. Why? Well, because we've always done it. All right, you're done. You see what I mean? So this is what we need to put all the things that we've always done into that same kind of, you know, humble reflection process to be like, okay, forget about the way you've always done it. Does it make sense? Why are you waking up four different apparatus crews for a rescue with two people on it to go run a call? Why is a battalion chief monitoring and staying half awake all night when you literally can just say, hey, can you tone out the chief? And then they'll get the call. So I think this is what's interesting now. And the same with what what we're talking about today. Why do we have to have loud alerting systems that scare the hell out of people and send their nervous system through the roof when there is an alternative now in the technology that you've developed? Or, you know, why do we just have a two-day peer support training weekend when now you have an AI platform that can actually help all of our first responders learn how to have these difficult conversations? So I think it's amazing. I really do.
Yeah, that's a great way to think about it. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, no, I just think the future is bright. You know, I try to, I get from my mom, right? Like, nothing's wrong. The world's great, right? The world is difficult, but I'm making the choice to not only love myself, but to love everybody else. And you know, in working with Blake is, you know, I truly believe that with what we've thought about coming up with, and things change over time. I don't think that there's going to be one solution out there that's going to work. But I think when you have people who believe in the mission and the outcome of, you know, at the end of the day, we want all of our firefighters to go home to their family. And, you know, and that's when we talk about mental health too. Like, we don't talk about the macro level of problems that come from, you know, Washington State's looking at cutting mental health benefits for firefighters to save money. Well, here's the thing. You're destroying families. Now you're going to have depressed and anxious kids who are now in therapy and on medications. Like, I mean, that's how our society works. You have, you know, trauma that's being spread throughout your agency because you're not taking care of things. Like, you know, the time for change is now. And you know, it's amazing to have people like yourselves that are speaking out against this, because the times we can't lose any more people. It's getting sad.
Well, even from a false economy point of view, you cut mental health benefits. What are the downstream costs of that? And this is the reverse of what we're seeing in 2472. You keep working your first responders as a 56-hour work week. What's the downstream cost? Well, we're living it now. Congratulations, fire service. This is, no one wants to do the job anymore. Cities and counties are bleeding money. We just discovered what happens if you don't change. So the opposite is true. And Pasco and Gainesville and all these progressive departments are showing, hey, now we're fully staffed. There's no overtime apart from, you know, I mean, they all have overtime, you know, events and that kind of thing, but not this consistent overtime model where you're being forced to work. And 20 years later, you're still using that as a staffing model. And it's the same with cutting programs. You know, the way that you save money, and I always use this as an example, the NHS, which I adore from the UK, the healthcare system, at its core is an amazing altruistic, I would argue, best healthcare system on the planet. All of us band together. And if you get hurt, if you're, you know, your family gets pregnant, you're going to have a child, if your beloved person gets cancer, whatever it is, we're going to take care of them. That works beautifully if you then put all your focus on making the rest of the nation as healthy as possible. But as what's happened in the UK, you allow it to be privatized, picked apart, understaffed, and then you allow fast food and all these other things to kind of perforate your culture, get rid of PE programs. Now the population gets fatter and sicker. Now you start destroying the healthcare system. So the way that you save money, people always ask, oh, we need more tax money, or we need more, you know, firefighter budget, whatever it is. You don't. The healthier your workforce, the more money you save, which then you can reinvest in even more, you know, initiatives to make it healthier and safer. We know how not to do it. So the converse is also true. When you fix the work week, when you put in a better alerting system, when you have access to mental health resources, all these areas, you're just amplifying the healing effects versus what we're doing at the moment, which is amplifying the Jenga tower effects.
Yeah.
Well, no. I think too, our politicians, like, and I'm just going to be really blunt. We don't matter. Me and you don't matter. We're dispensable, right? I've never felt more inhuman than what I've experienced dealing with the state of Washington and the system. It is horrible, absolutely horrible. And you wonder why our firefighters are asking, they're saying, hey, I need help. And then they go get help and they come back and kill themselves. That period of time after treatment, you go into treatment, is the most vulnerable state a person is going to be in. But you know what? You know what the fire service does? They don't fucking talk to you about it. They want to walk away from it because it's uncomfortable. We don't want to talk about it. So now we leave our brothers and sisters suffering alone, you know? And it's clear that all we are is nothing more than a body, right? Because it's clear investing money in my mental health is not valuable. It doesn't matter. That's what the optics look like to us as firefighters. And ultimately it comes up, I mean, who's better at organizing than we are, right? We kick ass like that. We need to step up and fight these states and cities like Denver who are cutting mental health benefits for firefighters. We need to step up and fight for them, because it's just going to make this problem 10 times worse. We're just kicking that can down the road.
Yeah. And I was going to add on, James, you kind of talked about the way we think about the fire service and investments, or what's my return on this. Of course, it all comes down to the dollar. So you have to speak that language to make it make sense. And one of our investor advisors, Stefan Truthen, he works with the Berlin Fire Department, and he's just a visionary in the fire service. And he talks about the fire department is not a cost factor, but a production center. Don't think about how much it costs the city for a department to run emergency response. Think about how much it produces for the city to provide that service to your communities. And that simple frame of mind shift, it turns into an investment vehicle for the cities to realize, oh, we can make money off of EMS runs and ambulance trips, and we can provide these services that increase our tax burden and all these things. Like, it's a production factor because it is better for the city, you know, and it does help. And so lean into that. It's really, like you said, just change that frame of mind.
One of the things that I hate hearing is the fire service is a business. And I know that's kind of partially what he said, but what I mean is, you know, that's thrown out there a lot. And I've always said, okay, well, if it's a business, why do we treat it like an Indonesian sweatshop and not Google? Because I went to Google HQ in London a couple of years ago, and they have a free cafeteria with all kinds of healthy food. They have gyms, they have daycare, they have flexible hours, because they understand that a healthy and happy workforce is then actually going to be more innovative, more efficient, and more productive. Yet, conversely, you have the way they look at us. So again, no matter how you look at it, if you look at the corporate world, the UK and Iceland specifically have just finished a study, and hundreds of businesses went to a four-day work week, eight-hour day work week with 1 hour lunch. And equally as productive, again, innovative, efficient, but you know, less sick time use, happier workforce, happier customers, obviously. So when the corporate leaders are, you know, doing these proactive changes that we're fighting for, and the fire service has the audacity to say we're a business without actually asking the business leaders what they're doing, it just goes to show the huge disconnect. We're not a business, we're a service, you know, and I hope that down the road, we're not looking to make money from transport. And I hope we minimize the amount of response that we go. The Northwest actually, I had one of my guests on who have nurse navigation. So they use 911 integrated telehealth to take away all those kind of non-emergent calls that we shouldn't be responding. We genuinely shouldn't. And empower the parent, the caller, whoever it is, to say, would you like to choose for yourself, treat at home, urgent care tomorrow, you know, whatever the thing is. And that eliminates a lot too. So it's okay for the corporate world to take some of our calls. We shouldn't have to justify our existence. But the problem is we've been asked to be the healthcare for the entire country, which is wrong, which again circles around to a lack of leadership. First responders should not be responding to non-emergent calls, and especially with the fear mongering. Oh, but there was this one time where it came in as a tummy ache and that happens. And you got to put your big boy pants on, you know, make sure that we're being diligent. And if someone falls through the cracks, you can't, you know, it's not a foolproof system. Those are going to happen, but you can't tar and feather the whole profession because of these anomaly events.
Mm-hmm. And another point I wanted to hit on too, when you were talking about, you know, the whys behind it and why Andrew and Ciento kind of stood out, it has to do with the person that Andrew is, the relationships that we build, the person that you are, James. I mean, Andrew connected us and immediately it was like, okay, this is great. You know, we get it as people. And we can talk about some of these things that are difficult to bring up. And it's because you care so much, Andrew cares so much. And the solutions that we're providing come from places that are truly, genuinely here to help. And not just fugazi idea pie in the sky, but let's get in the field. Let's try it out, see how it works, and move forward from it. Let's look at the data. What happens when we respond to every single call? Well, bad things happen. Okay, then let's make an adjustment here. Let's be rational. Let's be logical. Let's use the information at our disposal and not be just stuck in one way of doing one thing the same every single time, just because that's how the last group did it. So I think it's definitely important to have these conversations. We're making the changes slowly, but it's happening actually faster than I would honestly expect it to in the fire service. So it's encouraging for me to see. And you know, it's a real pleasure to be in these conversations. I love it.
I really believe that we're at the beginning of a renaissance, you know, in the fire service and hopefully then the nation. I think, you know, we could be a beacon of light for a lot of other groups in this country. I want to kind of highlight each of your products again, and then we'll kind of wrap up. So with Andrew, with you, for people listening, talk about where they can find Siento, and then what are the spectrum of products within that umbrella that you offer.
Yeah, so you can find me on LinkedIn. That's a great way. I'm pretty active on there. Our website's www.siento.io. If you want to try Siento SIM, it's free on there. Just click on Siento SIM and do a quick try now. So we already kind of talked about that. So, part of our product too is what people really wanted is like a peer support management system. So essentially we built the operating system for you to run your peer support team on. So all of your communications in an encrypted environment, all of you understand what ongoing requests you have, but in an anonymous fashion. So we're not, giving away identifiable information, but at least peer support teams understand the workload they're under. But then really what the approach we've taken, you hear a lot of culturally competent clinicians and that word get thrown out. Well, we felt like the solutions available, EAP and these other companies that are coming out saying like, hey, we have culturally competent providers for you. We believe as a company that should not come from us. So what we do is we bring all of our agencies together. So we're in 14 states. We bring them together and say, hey, put all of your resources that you're willing to share with other agencies into our platform. So if you're visiting Seattle and you're in crisis, you have a vetted, culturally competent clinician from Seattle Fire. Or you're in San Francisco, right? There's some news coming out of San Francisco soon. Ultimately, these organizations are just not organized and they need this operating system. And that's what Siento has done, is built that. And then the mobile application aspect of just connecting, we have a network. So there's nothing like this out there right now in that, we give the individual who's struggling the choice. Do you want to access your peer support team, or do you not feel comfortable with that? And you can reach out to the network, and then we use the agency's peer support teams to support each other. So again, that comes on to that individual peer supporter. Am I ready and open to taking something outside of my agency? And if they are, they can get connected. So yeah, it's super exciting. We have a lot of growth happening right now and changes happening and some other big partnerships happening. So there's going to be a lot coming. We're moving super fast, and it's been a very humbling and lonely journey, but I said it, I hate being seen. Like, this is something I learned about myself. I hate being seen. I know it sounds weird, but at the end of the day, like, I'm willing to go through that uncomfortable feeling if it can save somebody's life. That's what I'm chasing. And I know this is probably not healthy, but I'm chasing that feeling of saving somebody's life again, and I want to save one of my friends' lives. Like, that is my goal. I've lost 5 friends to suicide, and I'm done with it. So whatever it takes to end this, like, I'm going to keep going until it ends.
Beautiful. Well, Blake, same question to you.
Yeah, so you can find more information at easealert.com. That's EASEALERT. EaseAlert. We're on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook as well. I'm personally on LinkedIn, Blake Richardson. So a lot of information is on there, and we have a new website coming out really soon here. So we also have a new video, thanks to Andrew's feedback. And we've improved a lot of those materials to help you come to a website, understand what it is, and start bringing it to your department. What it is, it notifies you. It's your alerting system. So it can be an add-on. Let's say you have the latest and greatest. Your city just invested multi-million-dollar project on the latest and greatest fire station alerting system. No problem. You can add EaseAlert right onto that. So it's still a great investment that you made. You don't have to tear anything out. You're just adding on to it and enhancing your capabilities with our tactile alerting. So you can shake the bunk on the wrist as well with the TacPod, and then any other wireless alerting solutions as well. Or if, let's say, you're in a rural area, unable to afford that multi-million-dollar project, but need something because you're waking up to buzzers from a high school basketball gym. I've seen that, actually. You can get EaseAlert and install it in a day, It's a wireless system. Like I said, you just plug it into a wall outlet. You got your lights, you got your tactile alerts. We even do audible alerts as well. And it grows with you over time. So it's fully modular, designed for your needs and your needs only today and into the future.
Fantastic. Well, I want to thank you both. I'm excited to hear about, you know, when this does begin to integrate as well. But for now, you know, I think it's been an amazing conversation hearing these two kind of systems side by side. And, you know, again, as we said, layering these solutions. One of the things that really just irks me is when people say, oh, yeah, but it's complicated. That is, there is no greater rhetoric of the coward than saying something like that. There are multiple parts to it. Yeah, of course. But when you go to the grocery store with a list, you don't go, oh, but there's lots of things I got to buy. You just go aisle by aisle and you buy the things that you need for the day. It's the same as this. What are the problems? What are the things that we can use to improve each of those areas? So you guys have brought two, you know, amazing platforms to this conversation. So I want to thank you both for being so generous with your time today and coming on the Behind the Shield podcast.
Thank you, James.
Yeah, thanks, James. Appreciate it.